Okay, what's up, guys? My name is Podcast. My name is Solomon Lee, at Solomon Lee NBA on Twitter. So the Rockets free agency at this point is pretty much over. I suspect everything remaining is going to be smaller acquisitions. They have like $4.5 million in space left over, plus their room exception remaining. That's probably going to be divvied up between a couple players. Well, so we'll talk about that stuff when it happens. But I've waited long enough. It's time to review what they did in free agency. And to help me do that, I could not think of a better guest to have on than my dear friend, Alikhan Bijani at The Athletic. Alikhan, how are you doing?
Good, man. It's been a whirlwind last few days, man. I've been taking a chance to kind of think about what happened, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, so I figure we go through free agency step by step, and then we can kind of go over our overall thoughts and what they did. Does that work with you?
Let's do it. I think that's a good idea.
So I actually think Houston's free agency started a couple months ago with the hiring of Ime Udoka. And I say that because Ime, at his introductory press conference, gets pretty candid about the cap room that the Rockets have and how he would like them to use it. And he got pretty granular about it. Here's a line that stuck out to me. We would like to add contrasting pieces to what we already have. Alperen Sengun does some things really well, but we'd like to add some different types of bigs. And I remember hearing him say that. I was like, that's interesting. And I kind of brushed it off. But then reports start coming out about how Ime was like targeting Brook Lopez before free agency began. And in my head, I'm like, okay, that lines up with the different types of bigs line from the press conference. And I just kind of assumed that was the extent to his level of input in the process. And then Sam Amick of The Athletic reports that the Rockets had dialed back their pursuit of James Harden significantly at around the time Ime was hired, and that Fred VanVleet had now become their new primary target. And then it all kind of clicked into place for me. Ime had real sway in this process. And that first decision to not go after James Harden was like a line in the sand moment for the organization. Like, this is Ime Udoka's team now. And Harden does not fit into the vision that he wants. And to me, if you want to talk about the Rockets' first big move for agency, I think we have to start there. That first decision to not go after James Harden was their first de facto move for agency. Do you agree with me on that, or do you see differently?
No, I do. And now I'm going to tell you straight up, Salman. I've been saying this on different platforms the last few months, but the Tillman was very much happy with Ime's hiring. And Ime and Tillman had a really good kind of first interaction. And it's kind of led to where we are today, where Ime has such a large say in what they want to do in free agency. And I don't think people should discount that, in that Tillman really does approve of Ime Udoka. He's going to give him a shot, allow him to build a team that he wants to. Him and Rafael have actually been in really good conversations with each other about what they want to do, productive conversations, I should say. So I think there is organizational kind of structure in place where people are aligned in what they want. And I think Ime coming in was a big part of that. Like you said, Salman, about making that move from, you know, let's not necessarily pursue James, let's start pursuing another like Fred VanVleet. And then Ime in the last week before the start of free agency, when they introduced Amen and Cam, was very blunt about what he wants. He said in three different interviews in front of, I mean, the press conference when he introduced Cam and Amen, when he did a Sports Talk 790 interview, when he did it with Vanessa Richardson of AT&T Sportsnet, he said, I want players who have won. You know, I want players who have been at the biggest stage. I want players who are mature adults. And all these things align with the guys they went out and got, especially Fred VanVleet.
Okay, so let's talk about what they did instead, which is, you know, obviously Fred VanVleet. So they end up giving Fred VanVleet a 3-year, $130 million contract. That last year is a team option, but we found out about it like a full day later. And that lag was so pronounced that most people who aren't diehard Rockets fans still don't know about it. In fact, I actually had to email somebody from SpoTrack this morning so they can update their sheets online. That hasn't been updated yet. These are guys who pay attention to this stuff. So that's a different subject for a different day, like the fact that there was a lag. So this is how I feel about this move. So first, I feel much better knowing that the last year is a team option. I kind of thought the 3-year max for Fred VanVleet was kind of crazy, and I said it at the time. No offense to VanVleet, he's a very good player, but I kind of view him more as like a $30 million a year guy versus a $43 million a year guy.
Someone, I heard there's a rumor. There's a rumor that you started the nickname Fred Van Overpay. Is that true?
No, 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 that's not true. So I think that third year could have severely crippled their financial flexibility. And $45 million on your books when the contract extensions of Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün kick in just isn't ideal. But now that Houston has the ability to get out of that if they want it, I like the deal a lot more. Here's what I'll say, though. And this is probably an unpopular opinion, but I don't really care. It's my podcast. If it was possible to choose between James Harden, giving James Harden a three-year, $148 million contract with the third year being a team option, versus this contract for Fred VanVleet, which is, again, 3 years, $130 million, I'm inclined to pick Harden. Like, I think the difference in talent is that big. For all his faults, Harden, in my opinion, has maintained all NBA level play these past three seasons. VanVleet, there's like 10 point guards I would take ahead of him pretty clearly, and like three or four that I think are pretty debatable, I would strongly consider. And I'm not going to list them because I don't want to be mean or disrespectful to how good VanVleet is. But the point I'm trying to make is it's hard for me to envision a scenario in which he is worth the full amount of this contract that Houston gave him versus Harden, theoretically, what he would have gotten. So I'm just going to ask you, Alikon. Would you have rather had James Harden for that contract that I just, you know, laid out for you, or would you have had VanVleet for this one?
I think that's such an important question, because when you look at what ended up happening, you didn't get Brook Lopez, and you're coming in with a new starting point guard and potentially a starting three. The question, and you had the remaining cap space. The question, you know, I think it's a legitimate question. I'm going to answer by saying, personally, I would have gone James. I think for me, in the way I would have approached it, I would have gone James. But I understand why they went for Fred VanVleet. And I want to kind of give a perspective I think the Rockets are thinking about. I don't know this perspective, but this is something I think we're going to see over the next season with Ime. You have two different ways of kind of going about this season. Okay, and I think that was a big reason why they went out and got VanVleet over Harden. When you bring in a player like James, and when James was here, he was the alpha. And I know people may not want to hear it, but everything that he wanted, he got. Whether it's a specific way you want something done, whether it's like talking to media, whether it's whatever. James is James. He's the best player on the team. He was in charge. My question is, if he had come back, someone, and I'll make the second point, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this too. If he had come back, would that have continued? Would he have gone back to what it was in 2019, 2018, 2017, all the way down, where he was kind of, this was his team, right? You bring in a guy like Fred VanVleet, which is now is also going to be his team, but maybe they view it as Fred can be more of that vocal leader, more hands-on approach with the guys that they feel like is better suited for this team versus James. Even though, and I've written stories about this, and there's a lot of people who talk about it outside, James is good with young players. If you ask young players, they all talk about James. I don't know how many times when I was in the locker room in 2016, 17, 18, 19, I talked to young guys, Isaiah Hartenstein. I talked to Daniel House. I talked to a lot more young guys. They would all give effusive praise to James Harden for how much he trained and how he helped them get better at their games. So it's like I see the perspective, right, of that, you know, you don't want James back, maybe necessarily from a player development perspective. But I think, you know, maybe they were looking at it more from an off the court perspective with Fred VanVleet. I just don't know if it was something that was drastic enough for warrant that change. Now, let me go to the on-court thing. I think it's the second reason they got Fred in. There's two ways to approach the player development side. One is you have a guy like James who's going to have the ball in his hands and can set everything up. Okay, legitimately will set everything up for you offensively. You can run 21 series. You can run high pick and roll. You can run a 5-out offense. You can run high post action with James, and James can have the ball and kind of connect everybody. That's great. James can do all those things. What Fred does a little differently is Fred, back in Toronto, was very much a combo guard. Not a combo in the sense of point guard, shooting guard, but combo guard in the sense of the role he played, where he was on the ball a lot, especially these last few years without Kyle. But he was also in off-ball role and spot-up shooting opportunities a lot as well. And it kind of evened out for him. I don't have the percentages in front of me, but I was looking at synergy these last 2 years. Fred played both the pick and roll ball handler role and also the spot up role pretty evenly, right? Versus James is definitely more of a pick and roll guy. He wants to be the ball handler. So from a Rockets perspective, I think they may have chosen to bring in Fred from an on-court perspective because he allows these young guys to still get the reps and allow them to make those mistakes and make those decisions. Allows Amen to get involved. He can play with Amen effectively, all those different things. Versus James, to me, was a lot more of a table setter than Fred. And maybe they didn't want that as much as they wanted a guy like Fred who can play different roles, whether that's on the ball or off the ball, more comfortably than James would. So those are the two things I'm thinking about when it's like whether James or Fred needs to come in. I'm fine with Fred. I think Fred's going to be a great addition. But I think especially from how he's going to mesh with the players on the court, I think the Rockets chose that route versus bringing a guy like James in.
Right.
Right. So there's two counter... I had the same two counter arguments at play here. Like, so there's that first argument that you kind of alluded to. I'm gonna be a little bit, you know, more harsh about it. So there's this idea that Harden is this bad culture guy, right? That he would be a negative impact to the young players. That he likes to go out. That he likes to enjoy himself. That he doesn't work hard. And first of all, like, I don't know how many times we in the local media here in Houston have to combat that narrative. Harden did work hard. That's a complete false assumption that people made about him that doesn't actually track with what happened. He's a gym rat. He came into camp out of shape in 2015, and he hasn't lived that down. No other season has he willingly done that on the Rockets or any other team. The last season with the Rockets, he wasn't out of shape. He just wasn't trying because he wanted out. It was disgraceful. I'm not excusing it, but when he landed in Brooklyn, he hit the ground running because he was in shape. Now that second season in Brooklyn, he tore his hamstring and he came in out of shape because he couldn't work out all summer. That was well documented going into camp, but everyone ignored it because Harden typically doesn't get the benefit of the doubt in these types of scenarios. Other than that, yeah, the guy likes to enjoy himself a little bit off the court and he works his ass off and sets a good example on the court. All the young players that have played with him had nothing but positive things to say about him. Clint Capella, Montrezl Harrell, Isaiah Hartenstein, Daniel House, Gary Clark, even in Philly with Tyrese Maxey, all these guys had positive things to say about him. Some of those guys, particularly Capella and Maxey, even went as far as to say that he aided in their development as players. So I think that's just a complete argument. He may not be like Tim Duncan, but I never agreed with this idea that he's this poisonous figure that's a bad leader. That's the first counter argument, right? And then there's the second counter argument, which, you know, again, you also touched on, that carries more weight with me. It's pretty clear that Van Vliet is objectively a better on-court fit with this team than Harden is. This idea is like to get the most out of Harden, he has to dominate the ball and to a certain extent to really unlock the playmaking and shot making elements of his games. And Van Vliet, like, he doesn't need to do that. He's a willing catch and shoot three-point player who's willing to move off the ball versus Harden, who kind of just stands there. And defensively, it's no contest. Van Vliet's just better and would be much less of a disaster next to Jalen Green in the backcourt than Harden would have. So if your theory of the case is that Van Vliet is an inferior player, but his on-court fit is so much cleaner than Harden's would have been, that you're willing to accept and pay for the difference, I'm not sure I'd agree with you, but I think that's a perfectly reasonable argument.
You know, like I said, that's not necessarily what that's not necessarily how I, you know, believe or what I want. I'm just saying I think that's what the Rockets were kind of thinking about, right? It's legitimate, right? Like, it's a legitimate way, and I think we should trust Ime to give him a chance to be able to prove that, just based off of kind of what he's done in Boston. I think he deserves a chance to be able to show on the court what he wants to be able to do. I am concerned about one thing, though, when it comes to this plan of development, is that you bring in guys who are in different timelines, right? So you have Fred.
Can we touch on all this stuff at the end?
Yeah.
We'll get to that. So they side Van Vliet, and I think you and I agree. He's clearly going to make them better. Van Vliet's a fantastic on-court fit with Houston's young core, particularly Jalen Green.
Yeah.
Low turnover table setter who spaces the floor and plays defense. Everyone else on the team is going to benefit playing next to him. And then we don't hear from the Rockets for like a day. Like, we know that they're aggressively chasing Brook Lopez, but we don't know what's going on. And then suddenly Lopez makes the decision to return to Milwaukee on a 2-year, $48 million deal. So Houston loses their guy. And details start to emerge about this deal that Houston's completed with Atlanta, that they're sending out 2 second-round picks, Ty Washington and Usman Garuba. And immediately most of us are thinking, okay, so they're pivoting to contingency plans. They're probably making a deal for like Clint Capella. But then we don't hear anything. And then we hear that they've just agreed to a 4-year deal, $80 million with Dylan Brooks. And then we get more details about how they're trading KJ Martin to the Clippers for 2 second-round picks, and more details about how they're trading Josh Christopher to the Grizzlies. And now they're getting Patty Mills and a second-round pick from the Brooklyn Nets. Then it becomes pretty clear, okay, so this is like a multi-team sign trade for Dylan Brooks. And it seems the net result, at the time of recording this, Houston has traded away 2 second-round picks, KJ Martin, Ty Washington, Josh Christopher, Usman Garuda. And so far, all we know is that they've received 2 second-round picks and Dylan Brooks. And off the bat, I'm telling you, if this is the deal, however you feel about the players going out, that's objectively terrible asset management. In the moment, we thought they were gearing up to sign whoever their Brook Lopez contingency plan was, but it's clear that this deal was agreed under the assumption that they were going to land Brook Lopez. And the way the NBA works is when you agree to like multi-team trades like this, no matter what actually ends up happening, you can't just back out. You can't. This severely, if you did that, that would severely tarnish your reputation around the league, and it handicaps you for future trades because no one can trust you. So Houston has to keep their word, even though they got no commitment from Lopez. This is basically like when Daryl Morey thought he was getting Chris Bosh, so they dumped Jeremy Lin and a first-round pick to open up the cap space, and then Bosh chose Miami. Honestly, this deal is somehow worse than that, in my opinion, because they gave up on 3 first-round selections in Washington, Garuba, and Christopher, and they got nothing for it but Dylan Brooks, who they could have signed anyways with cap space. And what's even is they had to throw in 2 second-rounders to dump Washington and Garuba. Like, really? Like, these guys are on cheap rookie-scale deals. Like, it's like $5 million in annual salary for those dudes, and they may end up being, like, rotation-caliber guys. So you're telling me you had to give up 2 seconds to get this done? Like, even if they managed to successfully land Brook Lopez, I hate how badly they wanted him. Like, I don't know. Like I hate that they would go to that extent to do that. Ignoring the Dylan Brooks part of this for a second, what did you think of the trade?
Okay, so this is a question back to you. Now, I'm not disagreeing with you about the asset management part, but they needed to get those guys off the team. And even the KJ Martin thing, they needed to get him off the team because those guys were not going to play over any of their.
I don't hate the KJ Martin thing. Okay, 2 second-round picks for KJ Martin. Like, it's not like you might have preferred like a late first, but 2 second-round picks, you're getting something back.
Yeah,
you know.
And I'm okay with it because he's in line for an extension. And honestly, that's due diligence with his agent because you allow him to go to a place where he can earn a significant rotation minutes. Now
it's the other three guys.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna be very honest with you. Okay, Josh Christopher, he played minutes in the second half of the season last year. And what did he do with those minutes, Salman?
Not much.
Objectively, he shot terribly, and he was poor decision-making from the floor, okay? He had some good highlights, good deflections, all those different things. There's promise there. Can he put it together? Yes. But he did not do a good job in the minutes he was given. Let's look at Usman Garuba. Injured his first year for the most part, played last year, had some good moments. But was there a skill that he possessed that you were like, objectively, hey, you know what? This guy, if he just honed in on this, he can become a specialist in this. All
right? So he was very good at defense, right? But the problem was offensively, there wasn't anything to pivot to. Like, he didn't roll hard, and he didn't shoot threes. So I understand why
people will disagree with this. Like, oh, hey, Ollie Khan, Salman, what about his passing? What about this short roll thing? Objectively, you have an undersized center. You need him to be able to be good at something, especially his second season in. And granted, I'm not saying that he's not going to be a good player. I think he still has a chance to be a good rotation player in this league and be a good defender at that. But, you know, we just have to be objective about it. Lastly, Ty Washington. I mean, that dude just
didn't get a
chance.
This is the one.
He just didn't get a chance.
This is the one.
Now, granted, I wanted him to get a chance. I'm a big Ty fan. But this let's look at all three of those guys we just talked about. Josh Christopher, in the 20s first round pick. Usman Garuba, in the 20s first round pick. Ty Washington, in the 20s first round pick, right? realistically, what are the chances of those late 20s first round picks working out? Not high. However,
it's like one in two, yeah, basically. Well, yeah, it's like a 50-50 chance.
However, what I think Rockets fans are disappointed with, I think what you're disappointed with, I think what I'm disappointed with, is the development issues from the last 2 years and then last year with Ty led to the value going down to such a level that they had to essentially dump them and attach assets to dump them, which on their own, they should be considered assets. I think that's the problem Rockets fans have. And to me, that is a completely valid reason to be disappointed. Does that take anything away from what I said about how the players played? Absolutely not. And hopefully they can go into situations where they can improve and get the chance to do so. That being said, the development from the last few years, and there's somebody on Twitter, Chris White, he had this term called the Silas tax. It's like, I don't know, man. I thought it was really funny. The Silas tax for these players, basically the development, all the issues from the last 2 years, it's led to a big devalue or a lower value of these players. And it's cost them now, especially with this trade.
Ty Washington specifically, there was no question in my mind in the minutes that he played that he looked like the best backup point guard option to me last year. He looked like it. And they continued to play Dacian Nix over him. And I was like, Dacian Nix is not good. He's not good at anything. He's bad. He's just a bad basketball player. I feel bad for him. I think, you know, I want him to succeed. I hope he succeeds somewhere else. He just got away to the beginning of the season. I hope he lands on a team. But objectively, the guy's just not good. And Ty Washington was like a calming presence for them. He had good touch. I think there was reasonable optimism for him to become like a backup point guard in the NBA. And, you know, it's one thing to dump him. It's another thing to attach second rounders to dump him. Like, okay, if you're going to give up Garuba, fine. You know, if you have to dump him and you have to attach Ty Washington to do it, fair enough. But you had to attach Ty and 2 seconds? That's what's particularly upsetting to me. And again, Josh Christopher, when they picked him, I wasn't a big fan of the pick, but he really impressed me that first year, second season. You're right, he didn't look that great. Some of that's on Silas, some of that's just on him. He didn't play well. And I think, you know, I don't know. There is some reason to believe that these guys probably wouldn't have gotten opportunities next year, right? Like there's the. Your mic's off.
Like even if you don't bring in Brooke Lopez, they still realistically don't get opportunities right now. You have Alperen Sengun, and we're going to talk about him, Jock Longdale. You at the wing position, you have Jayshon Tate, who they love, Jabari Smith Jr., Tari Eason. Is KJ Martin going to play in front of those three? Is Usman Garuba going to play in front of those three? Or even Jock Longdale or Alperen Sengun? Is Ty Washington going to play in front of Kevin Porter Jr., Fred Van Fleet, Jalen Green, or anybody else they bring in at the vet minimum? No. So where were they going to play? Now, granted, like I said, I may not necessarily fully be on board with the asset management aspect of the trade, but I think it was worth trading him because their roster now was a lot cleaner. And I think that's the way to describe it. It's a cleaner roster. You have an identity in terms of your young players. And what that identity is and what that structure is you have this core 6-7 players. You want to see how those 6-7 players look when they're surrounded by NBA-level talent and veterans who can elevate the floor of their play and get them in situations where they can learn and understand what it takes to win basketball games. And I think just based off of that overall goal, I'm okay with the trades that happened. But am I happy necessarily with the asset management? Honestly, no.
Yeah, like I think, listen, like they had to trade these guys, right? They had to trade at least KJ for sure. And I think to some extent you had to trade one of Garuba or Christopher, right? I think they weren't going to find opportunities here. Again, like I'm just upset that they wanted Brooke Lopez that badly. Like I just wasn't a fan of their Brooke Lopez pursuit. You can react to that if you want.
No, I understand why they wanted Brook. They wanted rim protection. Now, they got two good point of attack defenders in Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, who allow them to kind of work well there. Ime Udoka's always been a guy who likes to play a very aggressive switch scheme. And if you want to think of aggressive Rockets fans, think of Jeff Bezdelic. What Jeff Bezdelic used to do is like, hey, we're going to switch. I want you to grab them by the shoulders and guide them towards the switch. Ime is very similar. He wants to be aggressive at the point of attack in a switching scheme. And you bring in a guy like Dylan Brooks, who, by the way,
Wait. I need you to clear the runway for me real quick.
I'm about to go off.
Okay. I was gonna get into this, and then you can react to it. However,
let me just finish on the Brook Lopez thing real quick.
Okay. Yeah. Brook Lopez. Go ahead.
So I understand why they wanted Brook. They wanted to bring in a guy with different skill set, all those different things. But honestly, I really think Jock Longdale allows that to happen. I think they lucked into that a little bit. I'm a fan of Jock Longdale, but now the keys are with Alpi, man. This is Alpi's chance to prove with two good point of attack defenders and whoever that third wing or guard is going to be that's small, along with VanVleet or Brooks as a starter. If it's KPJ or Jalen, they're starting because they earned it defensively, because Ime's not going to, you know, allow poor defense to be played at that role. So essentially, Alpi's going to have three guys who are going to commit hard to playing good point of attack defense. And this is Alpi's chance to prove that he can anchor a defense at the back line. Yeah. And I have confidence he can, but I think the Rockets honestly lucked in to this because I don't believe in Brook. I'm a fan of Brook. I think he's a defensive player, your caliber guy. But this actually allows you to assess the best way to play Alper and Şengün defensively, and if he's worth as a foundational piece for you moving forward. But sorry,
Well, that's why I wasn't a fan of the Brook Lopez pursuit. It's like they weren't going to give him the chance. It's like they were about to undercut him again, right? It's like they were shaping up, doing everything they possibly could to try and not give this guy a fair shake. And now he's going to get that fair shake by happenstance, right? Like, so we'll see how much of a fair shake he gets next year. You're right. Like, yeah, he might start, but what he does in that starting position is important, right? We know now with Steven Silas, like, starting isn't everything. Right, starting is just part of it. So let's talk about the Dylan Brooks contract. 4 years, $80 million in mostly guaranteed money. So Woj reported that it's a declining salary. Our good friend Kelly Eco reported that there were some incentives in here. I don't suspect it's a lot, though. So here's what I think, and I wrote about it for NHSoups.com.
Man, here we go.
This contract is not that bad. Now, would I have preferred a three-year, $45 million contract in line with kind of what Mark Stein was reporting the day before free agency began? Yeah, but that would have been considered a sweetheart deal. Like, let's talk about what Dylan Brooks is as a basketball
player. Who is Dylan Brooks, someone?
This is a starting caliber small forward that just came off a second-team all-defense selection. He shoots 34% from three for his career. I'd say his fair market value is around $18 million a year. I'd say that's probably what he's fair market worth. That's probably what I think he's actually worth, but if not for the Rockets, it looked like he was about to get squeezed and get forced to accept a $12.4 million mid-level exception from some other team. Basically, his antics drove his value down. Like, he's not perfect. The reason I would have preferred a $15 million a year contract is because I hate his shot selection. The antics actually don't bother me. I actually like that he has a bit of an edge and that he likes to trash talk. That's part of what makes him so good on defense. This is not like a 6'9 guy with a 7'1 wingspan. He's a 6'6 guy with a 6'6 wingspan. He's good on defense because he's ultra confident in his abilities, and he's a pest. When you look at the other wings on the market that are around his caliber, $20 million is not that far off from the norm. I wrote about this in the article. RJ Barrett, $27 million a year, 34% from three. Andrew Wiggins, $27 million a year, 35% from three. DeAndre Hunter, $23 million a year, 36% from three. Caris LeVert, $16 million a year, 34% from three. So you have to remember that the salary cap is more than double what it was 10 years ago. So a $20 million a year contract is like $9 million in 2014 in relation to the cap. His deal occupies a similar percentage to Houston's cap to what Trevor Ariza's deal was 8 years ago in relation to Houston's cap. It's like 2% more. Trevor Ariza was like 13%. He's 15%. And I got to be honest, like, as I was watching the coverage and people reacting to this deal, I was disappointed. Like, there were smart people, people who understand the salary cap and know all the things I just said and wrote about lambasting this deal. Like, you guys should know better. Like, Dylan Brooks, listen, he's not a perfect player, but this deal is probably going to look like a decent deal in a year or two. I despise the shot selection, again, but I'm optimistic with that Ime Udoka will get him to dial it back a bit, because to this day, he's the only coach that was able to successfully get through to Marcus Smart to dial it back with his shot selection, and it led to by far the most successful year of Smart's career. And listen, Smart's a much better player than Brooks, but the shot selection thing tracks, it holds, and I think he can get the guys to mostly stick to catch and shoot threes.
And for his career, Brooks is not bad at those.
Like, last year, he shot 36% on catch and shoot threes, 34% the year before that, but he was injured and he only played 31 games, 39% the year before that, 38% the year before that. He's a legitimately good catch and shoot three-point shooter, and the guy just takes too much dog pull-up catch and shoot, pull-up threes. Like, he shot 25% on those, and it drags down the rest of his numbers. If you clean up the shot diet, the guy is like a 36 to 37% three-point shooter. I don't hate giving this guy $20 million a year because he is, in my mind, only a slight overpay, and it's only going to look like a slight overpay for those first 2 years. Because when we get to years 3 and 4, this contract may actually look team-friendly, because you're talking about $19 and $18 million a year, respectively, at that point. And the salary cap is going to keep going up 5 to 10% a year in the background of all that with the new TV deal that comes up in 2 years. So that deal could end up looking like a bargain if Ime can get Brooks to play the right way. And I'm optimistic he can do that. Like, what do you think?
Am I being too rosy?
Because I feel like I'm being cold and everyone else is being emotional about this.
Look, I want to start off with the offense first, because that's the biggest talk about this contract. I'm going to bring up some just numbers here and just to give some context. Okay. From a corner three-point shooting perspective, early in his career, he was better in the right corner. Now he's better in the left corner. He's right now still only good in the left corner. Above the break, he's about league average or below. So there's wiggle room to work with there. Just from, like, I'm just trying to help our listeners imagine kind of his shot profile around the three-point line. Let's go back to this 2019-2020 season, when there were zero dribbles on his shot attempts. This is from three, okay? Catch and shoot three, zero dribbles. On 4 3-point attempts per game, on zero dribbles, 38%, okay? One dribble, 40%. Okay, this is 2019 and the 2020 season. Let's fast forward to now. Zero dribbles, 35%. One dribble, 24%. Two dribbles, 27%. It's the dribbling. It's the shot selection, like you talked about, just trying to enhance and reinforce what you're saying. If you allow him to play within a structured offense and not take those shots, I think we're going to see a big improvement in the way he plays. And also, you have to also look at who they have on the coaching staff. They honestly have two shooting coaches, not just Ben Sullivan. I can't think of the other person who came in from the Clippers, but he also was a shooting coach. They understand the importance of helping these guys improve their mechanics. I'll give a Ben Sullivan story. Okay, look at Derek White. Derek White came from San Antonio, not this past season, but the season before the trade deadline, and really helped them, you know, vault them towards a finals appearance because of how well he played in the second unit. And now, by trading away Marcus Smart, he is their starter. Okay? He's gone significantly better as a three-point shooter. And a lot of that is thanks to the mechanical adjustments that Ben Sullivan helped make with him. Dylan Brooks can shoot. We've seen it, right? We go back to his first three seasons. He can shoot. Just go back. You know, let's fix the shot selection, which I think we can do. And then also help him go back to some of the mechanical issues that may have been kind of making it more difficult for him to shoot well. Go back to what he used to do. And let's see if that percentage goes up too. If his percentage goes up, if all these things go up, I think Rockets fans will not be sad or disappointed or the emotional stuff you're talking about. Now, granted, it's also free agency, Salman. You're going to overpay in free agency. There's a reason why guys get more team-friendly deals or more reasonable deals when they're re-upping with their actual organizations. But when they go out in free agency and to take that player away, you have to overpay them. And in this case, with Dylan Brooks, I'm not saying I like the contract. Yeah. I'm not like calling it egregious is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I'm not, I don't like it a lot. I don't dislike it to an extent, but I think that you have to overpay in a situation and give him 4 years to take him away from other teams and other other opportunities. Okay, he wasn't going back to Memphis, and I think Rockets fans, and it's valid, want to figure out who were they kind of competing against for this contract, all those different things. But from just a contract value perspective, I think the points you're making are great, right? When you compare it to other wings across the league who have similar shot profiles in terms of percentages, it is aligned with the numbers they got. And then I want to go into defense, and I know you're going to talk about it with me too. These are just stats from B-Ball Index, and I have some other stats too. 99th percentile among all starters in the NBA in terms of off-ball chasing. 99.5 percentile in ball screen navigation. 99.7 percentile in perimeter isolation defense. This dude is one of the best, if not the best, point of attack one-on-one defenders at the wing position in this league. You can ask any scout in the league. They will tell you this guy is an elite on-ball defender. What was the Rockets' biggest Achilles heel last year, Salman? Was their on-ball defense. It broke down everything else. I mean, yes, the Rockets team could not play within a structured scheme. They would have breakdown after breakdown. But a lot of that,
They also couldn't fight over screens at all. Yeah, like, they never fought.
I used to always talk about the help defense being very poor, but a lot of that had to do the fact they would lose contain at the point of attack, and you bring in a guy you can put on the top player who can at least make it more difficult on them. He's only allowed a 40-point score three times in the last two seasons combined.
Yeah,
that's impressive. And he's playing against the best scorers on each team every single night. Three times he's only allowed 40 points. In today's NBA, that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's really, really good. I mean, here's the thing. If you just think he's a bad basketball player, like, first of all, like, you're dumb. Like, we're not going to have a conversation, right? Like, anything we're saying right now, you're not going to be receptive to. So it's no point. Just turn the podcast off. But if you're willing to entertain the idea that you and I are, he's actually really, really good at this one thing, and he's pretty capable as a shooter when you clean the shot diet up, then you can understand why this is not that bad of a contract. And, like, again, years 3 and 4, I think we can get to a point where it may be team friendly, because the cap's going to go up 5 to 10% a year. The contract is declining, and at that point you're talking about fair market to maybe even slightly below fair market, depends on what other people would receive at the time. We'll see value. And I'm not mad at this, man. I'm not. Like, I think on the last podcast, I said I would be upset at them giving $18 million a year. And then I immediately regretted it, because I was like, I don't actually think that $18 million a year is a bad contract. I think that's fair value. I think even before free agency, I said that I thought that he was going to receive the best dollar for dollar value of the deals that Houston gave out this summer. I believe that he got that. I think dollar for dollar, he is more worth his contract than what Fred VanVleet's going to be worth his contract, right?
Oh,
You think Fred VanVleet's closer to a $40 million a year versus Dylan Brooks to a 20?
I mean, it's hard to say. I don't think it's like a for sure thing that Dylan Brooks is going to be better suited for his contract versus Fred VanVleet.
This is what I'll say. I think Fred's like $10 million off, and I think Dylan Brooks, if anything, is like $2 to $5 million off.
Okay.
Annually.
I think that's fair. I think the whole thing with Dylan Brooks also is just people just when he's not on your team, you're like, man, what is this guy doing? You need that kind of guy on this team, man. This team needs to have more of an edge, more of a passion towards playing a specific way defensively. You bring in a guy like Dylan Brooks, who even on Memphis, his coaching staff, Jaren Jackson, defensive player of the year, was so adamant in his praise for Dylan Brooks because of how much he helped him, you know, get to where he is defensively. Dylan Brooks changes your perimeter defense. And for a team that struggled at it, for a coach in Ime Udoka, who honestly, perimeter defense is very big to him because it allows you to play more of a shell defense, right? Shell is basically not losing the connection around the paint, around the three-point line. It allows you to do all those things if you can just contain, you know, and play with discipline, and he allows you to have a starting point at that. And to me, there's not a value. I would not have paid him. Actually, no, that's a lie. I would not have paid him a lot. But I do think that he is very valuable for what the Rockets want to do. And look, we're not talking about playoffs yet and how much he struggled as a shooter in the playoffs. We're not talking about NBA finals, right? This dude is here to help this team play more meaningful regular season games. And in the regular season, he's one of the best defenders in the NBA. Well, second team all defense is going to catapult this team maybe into top 20 or top 15 defensively, just by having him there. That being said, you can't just catapult yourself as a Rockets fan and thinking, oh, man, what is he going to be like in the playoffs, or what is it going to happen in this? He's just going to help elevate the floor of this team. And that's just my biggest message here with Fred VanVleet, with Dylan Brooks, with whatever free agency trade, whatever they do. You're trying to increase the floor of this team to give you a better understanding of what you have and those young players you want to take the next step.
Yeah, you're trying to get to the playoffs, right? Like, once you get there, you can figure all that out. I mean, if you got there this year, this is a home run free agency, right? I'm not sure if they'll get there this year. I think they're more of a play-in team than the playoff team. But as far as, like, when you get there, like, if you get there, everything is like found money. It's all found money. Okay, so let's talk about Jock Landale and Jeff Green, shall we? So I like betting on Landale. I think it's a safe bet because while it's a 4-year, $32 million a year, only the first year is guaranteed. And I feel like this is a guy who's been misused in both San Antonio and Phoenix. Because if you look at how San Antonio and Phoenix play, they are allergic to three-pointers. They have been allergic to three-pointers for like 3 or 4 years now. Like, they consistently are at the bottom of the league in three-pointer shot per game. And Landale, if you look at how he played in Australia, this is a stretch big in the traditional sense. He was taking three threes a game and shooting 37% on them in the NBL. He's a good rebounder, decent defender. Like, I think this idea as a backup big for Houston makes sense long term. And as far as Jeff Green is concerned, I kind of think this is more like a veteran presence. He might actually play because I think Ime wants that optionality. He seems to, you know, at least want the option to pivot from Şengün. I'm not saying he is wanting to get off of Şengün, but he wants to pivot from him if he has the optionality to. So I think he may have an opportunity to earn the backup big spot. We'll see. I mean, he's a guy who's been in the league for like 14, 15 years. He can stretch the floor. He can play pick and roll. I think he's fine for the $6 million a year.
$8 million. And let me tell you, this is where I think the Rockets deserve a lot of credit. You can give them flack for Dylan Brooks. You can give them flack for the trades, all those things. If you're a Rockets fan, you have to give them praise for how they handled the Jock Landale contract. In all honesty, it's like you're paying him for 1 year and then 3 years of non-guaranteed money. And that non-guaranteed money can be a really good thing when you're aggregating salary in trades.
Trades, right.
And I'm a big fan because you have his contract, you have Jayshon Tate's contract, you have Kevin Porter Jr.'s contract. And we talked about this. Now you have tradable assets you can aggregate, you know, in the market to be able to push out. And
that's part of the reason they got rid of those guys versus Tate, right? Like those young
guys. Young guys don't have those high number contracts or mid-level contracts to be able to do it. You don't want a team where it's like you have Fred VanVleet at the max or you say you had James Harden at the max, and then you had a couple other guys at the max, and then you just had minimum players. Like Phoenix, for example. Phoenix right now does not have any tradable assets. I mean, they can't make trades, period. But you see what I'm trying to say is that you need to – if you're a team like – look at Oklahoma City. What do they do? They have their young guys. They have Shai Gilgeous, who's at that max player. And they bring in veterans or they trade for different guys who they can trade for more or aggregate or do things. That's another way you can get assets. And this is a way for the Rockets to be a part of that game, be a part of the whole thing that happens in the offseason or in trade deadline where teams are trying to get rid of salary or they want to add on salary. And, well, look, you have a couple contracts with non-guaranteed salaries for multiple years. And they're players who can play in this league. So for me, I think that was a home run contract for them. And it's a guy who can play and is actually good in his role. I have no issues with Jock Landale's contract. I think he's going to be a helpful guy in this for this team.
Yeah, and it's like a, just a good bet, like because like it's hard to find these guys. But if you look at the team context, it's much easier, right? If you really deeply analyze where they were playing and how they were being misused, it's much easier to find guys who are undervalued. And Lawndale, I think, is a guy that could be undervalued. I'm not saying he is. I'm saying he could have been. And I think you have the opportunity to find that out in Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jeff Green, listen, I have no problem with it. Like, he may be washed. He may be a contributor. It's tough when you get to 38, 37 years old. It's tough to tell when you're gonna, like, when that drop's gonna come. But he was good last year for Denver. I mean, he was on a title. He was on a championship team. So this, I'm willing to buy into this idea that he may be worth this contract. And it's only 1 year. And if it works out, great. If it doesn't, it's fine. It's not a big deal.
I think with Jeff, it kind of goes back to what I told you about the impact of having veteran guys on the team. He is well respected in any locker room. There were often times with Denver last year where he would talk to some of their superstars and kind of give them direction or guidance on what's going on, talk to veterans as well. I think he's just a trusted voice. During the NBA Finals, they were playing in Miami. He brought the entire Denver Nuggets team to his house for dinner. And they posted with everybody posted with him. I mean, he's just a likable guy. Everybody loves Jeff Green. I just think he's going to be a great locker room presence. And like you said, he can play. He did not play much in the playoffs, which shortened rotation. But I think giving him spot minutes and letting him play 8 to 10 to 15 minutes, if you need to, or the second unit or whatever you need, I think he can do it. And I just think it's a great guy to have in a locker room to be able to help your young guys. Especially for me, I think he'll have the biggest impact on Jabari Smith and Tari Eason just to help them understand how to play that role for a team.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk about a guy like very definition of journeyman, right? That's what Jeff Green is, right? Jeff Green's been to like 12 NBA teams. I don't know how many NBA teams he's played on. And it took him a while to find his footing in the league. Like, really, he found it with the Rockets, right, as a stretch five. And, you know, like, being able to communicate his journey to these young players may be something that is helpful to them. You know, I'm not this big culture guy, right? I've never been that guy. But in terms of a guy that's actually helpful to you on the court and can help young players understand what they're doing wrong, you know, learn from his mistakes. This is a guy that I think is reasonable. It's not like he's taking up like six rosters. He's taking up one roster spot, and you still have salary to go get young players if you want.
And you still have spots to be able to bring in veteran additions. And by the way, summer league roster came out yesterday. Just in terms of roster, I just wanted to bring one guy up, who I think is somebody who the Rockets. Rockets fans were really like. His name is Jay Huff. He was in the Wizards organization due to 7-1. I like him. I think he can be somebody that can maybe earn himself a two-way spot or potentially like a one-year deal or something. So I'm excited about him, but I think the Rockets have space to be able to add a veteran or two as they get closer towards the season that can be another voice in the locker room, but also a veteran guy who can play spot minutes in case of injury or other issues.
Yeah, I am a little nervous that they're bringing Boban back. It's like you're bringing Jeff Green and Boban. Like, can we pick one and reserve the other roster spots for young people? We'll see. We'll see what they decide to do there. You can go into training camp with 20 guys on the roster, and the three two-way guys count as part of those 20 guys. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how they narrow that down. I think they've used two ways, right? Trevor Hudgens and Darius Days.
Yes.
Okay, so they have one more two-way left. So maybe they give it out to him, and we'll see what they decide to do in summer league. I am very excited to watch them in summer league this year, much more so than last year, because a lot of the guys from last year are coming back, which almost never happens in summer league. I mean, that's I'm pretty happy we get to see guys like Tari Eason back out there, and we get to see Cam Whitmore like go against pretty much every team that passed on him in the draft, right? Every team that was like, no, thank you,
dude.
These medicals are a problem. Dude. Like, we get to see him like go batshit against them.
Yeah, dude, Cam Whitmore, I think it has the most NBA ready body out of any Rockets draft pick in the Rafael Stone era. Dude is 6'7, 235 pounds. 6'7, yeah. 235. In comparison, Jabari Smith, who's 6'10, 6'11 at the start of last season, was his measurement. At the start of last season, Jabari Smith was 6'11 and 213 pounds. Cam Whitmore is 6'7, 235, right?
Yeah.
And a guy like that, you don't need multiple off seasons to be able to get an NBA body shape. He has that. Tari Eason is 6'8", 217. All right? Amen Thompson, 6'7", 215. Cam Whitmore is 6'7", 235. He has an NBA body. I'm so excited to be able to watch him play.
Yeah. And, you know, the fact that Houston was – listen, I still think it's terrible asset management, but – there is a way of investing in your roster by divesting in the players that aren't really helping, right? Like being able to get more minutes to Cam Whitmore, giving more minutes to Eason, giving more minutes to Jabari, like that is more helpful than giving like 20 minutes to Eason and like 10 minutes to Josh Christopher. Like it's much better, it's much more equitable roster management that way. So it's going to be interesting to see how they perform at Summer League. And by the way, Thompson, I hated watching the overtime Elite League. It was very, very tough for me to watch. I'm very excited to see him in an NBA-like environment, not in an NBA environment. Summer League's not that, but a closer to an NBA environment than what overtime Elite is. I think the guy is a blast to watch play. And seeing him surrounded with like this summer league roster is going to be very, very fun because he's just going
to
be.
Their summer league roster has a lot of shooting, man. And that's the one thing the Rockets need to, I think, maybe think about some more how they want to address shooting. Yeah, you got a couple young guys in here who can shoot the lights out of the basketball. And I think it'll give them a good shot to be able to prove themselves in summer league. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. It's going to be very, very fun. So overall, on the whole for free agency, let's give them a grade. I think the trade that the 5 or 6 team trade that they made is like a scarlet letter weighing them down for me, right? Like that, like I kind of have to count that as part of free agency. If that trade didn't happen, I'd be much higher on what they did. And the Van Vliet contract, again, I'm not the biggest, like give the guy like a full max for 2 years kind of guy, but I get it. I understand the reasoning. So I'm going to say B minus C plus. That's kind of the off season I'm leaning towards. I think that's, if that trade didn't happen, we're talking B plus offseason. If you got Van Vliet on a better deal, we might get to A minus territory, you know? So like that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. B minus C plus.
I had a C minus originally, but I think so giving me some more time to think about it, I'm going towards more of a B minus B, just a regular B. You bring in two guys who are going to help you tremendously to raise the floor of your team. And from just the overall, like, end goal perspective, right, long-term perspective, you have guys that are going to help elevate the floor for your young players to give them a shot to prove to you they are worth investing in with max-level contracts. And so just for that reason alone, I'm happy with it because you bring in two guys who I think are legitimate guys to help your team.
Yeah, and listen, like, if we learned anything in the offseason, like we can talk big picture takeaways from the offseason. My biggest big picture takeaway is like this is Ime's team, and for better or worse, like the image of this team is going to be crafted around the way he likes to coach, and I'm going to be very interested to see what that means. Right, like we know what it meant for free agency. Right, we know the guys they wanted, the guys they were targeting, how that looks into the regular season. How that looks if this team ever makes the play-in tournament this year, like how that looks going into that, it's going to be interesting. I think I'm just very happy that Alperen Şengün gets his shot, gets a fair shot to at least prove himself in training camp. Like that to me is a big win. I think Brook Lopez non-signing is going to look like a blessing in disguise for them because I know they wanted Brook. I don't think they needed Brook, and I think Şengün is going to show them why they didn't need Brook. And I hope he goes into training camp with that kind of fire. And I hope he is actually 2 inches taller because that'd be great. That'd be awesome.
I did my own scientific calculation on Twitter a few days ago, Salman. I counted basketballs and measured the diameter of an NBA ball and tried to see if he's actually 7 feet. And based off my calculations, he is 7 feet tall. But I say that with the highest level of sarcasm in doubt because I don't think he's actually 7 feet tall. But even if he got half an inch or an inch taller, that's a big one.
Give me 6'10". I'll be happy with 6'10", 6'11". I'm okay with that because then you're talking about, okay, like defensively, I don't have to worry
about it. But he has gone taller. I will tell you, I don't think the Rockets even have a measurement. I don't know if they have a measurement or not. Otherwise, I think we may have been, probably would have leaked out somehow, some way. But he has gone taller.
Yeah. Hey, at the very least, I'd like for him to get measured in shoes going into training camp. That'd be great. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with all this, the remaining space, the rest of the offseason, the measurements, all that stuff. Summer League is right around the corner. It's in a couple of days. The Rockets play their first Summer League game. I'm very excited to watch it. I'm sure as are you. I'm not going to be there this year for the first time in like 5 years. Disappointing, but I am very, very excited to watch it.
No, me too, man. I just think it's going to give us a really good idea of Amen Thompson in an NBA setting and how well he can play, you know, compared to his peers and running an offense. And I'm not worried about his shot in terms of the development with that. I think it's good for him to be able to kind of just at least feel what it's like to touch the paint and make the pass. He was very good at that in Overtime Elite. I want that to translate as well in an NBA level. Get in the paint off a pick and roll or in transition, make the pass. Let him get repetitions and just build his confidence that way.
Yeah, for sure. All right, listen, thank you so much for coming on, Elikhan. We will talk to you later on, perhaps before the season or as the season gets picked up. This was fun.
See you soon, bro. See you soon, man.